Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show Edge Rush in association with Betfred. Hey, do you like the way that my edge rush is getting better every week?
Yeah, because I actually remember, because obviously I edit this podcast as well as being on it, and I actually remember the first one was incredibly stiff and
was
pretty
it?
Unnatural, to be fair, yeah. I didn't want to tell you because I don't want you to overthink it.
What was the first one like? I'm going to go back and listen to it.
I think you just go, welcome to the Nat Coombs Show, Edge Rush.
Edge Rush.
As if it was a question.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Yeah.
I think we should always do Edge Rush like that from now on. I love that. Edge Rush, we are back. We are back in business proper. Because of that Akka freight train, not just back on the tracks, but back on the tracks and then some, back up to a 2-week winning streak after our Akka drop last week.
Yeah, and another exciting one as well. Obviously, a little bit. It was almost over before it started with that Buffalo Bills game, but Josh Allen and that Buffalo Bills defense came through with that last second Hail Mary. I was getting a tiny bit worried. I was getting a little... Well, you were the person who was saying that you suddenly backed the Colts at that point and that you told me convincingly that the Colts were definitely the team going to cover. And then as soon as the Bills took, what, that 14-point lead, you were like, I always knew the Bills were going to win this.
Well, if you think last week was bad, this week is getting even harder in that respect.
Yeah,
you and I have been flip-flopping backwards and forwards on every game all week. Just to instill confidence in our listeners straight off the bat there. But look, the Akka landed, which is great. We were on Baltimore as well, which of course landed. We like the over in the Rams game. So generally a pretty good week again for us last week. We won't talk too much about the failures. I'd rather celebrate the successes than
at some point we do have to address that my prop bets are on a little bit of a losing streak. You know it's going badly when you lose a bet despite the player not taking a snap in Ronald Jones.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's not going too well. And also the best thing about it was that Leonard Fournette then continued to go for 90 plus yards and score a touchdown, which just makes you feel even 10 times worse. But at the same time, we move on and we keep going. We keep moving that.
That's what I like. Positive energy, positive attitude. Let's get down to it then. So there are four games, of course, in the divisional round. Each one very difficult to call, but we've got some angles on some of them that we feel reasonably good about. Others, I think we're going to talk through the games, we're going to put forward arguments, and I guess if we kind of lean one way, great. And you at home, of course, will be playing along in the same way. It gets tougher when you get to this stage of proceedings, and that is part and parcel of it, I guess. Let's start with the Rams-Packers. Intriguing game, of course, with the top-scoring offense in the NFL up against the best defense in the NFL.
Exactly. I think that is the main focus for this game. The line is currently Green Bay are favored by 6.5 points and the over under is at 45.5. The action on this game is very interesting. So in both instances, on both the over and the point spread, the majority of bets have been going in one direction, but the money and the lines have been going in another. So, for example, the over has been, there's been a lot of bets on the over, but the amount of money has been coming in on the under. And that's why we've seen this line move from 46.5 to 45.5. And also, majority of bets have been coming in on Green Bay, because as I said, I think they are the most popular team in the NFL right now, with obviously Aaron Rodgers almost certainly going to win the MVP. Everyone focusing on them, but at the same time, so the bets are going on Green Bay, but the money is going in on the Rams. And that's why this line has moved from 7 to 6.5 as the week has gone on.
That is fascinating. And it kind of faintly reassures me, because it doesn't always work this way, of course, but typically if the money is going one way, the sharps are going with that, right? So
yeah.
I, early on, and just to reiterate, we flip-flopped on every game 74 times already this week. But early on, and I think even now, straight off the bat, I'm leaning towards the Rams with the points. And I'll put it forward. And the asterisk, the caveat, is pretty obvious and self-evident, which is the quarterback situation, because that is so unclear at the time of us recording this anyway, which is Thursday morning. If Goff starts, is his thumb going to be knackered? Is Wolford going to be out of concussion? Is Wolford going to be fit from his stinger? Who's going to start? What kind of shape are they going to be in? And I think that does significantly affect what kind of offense I think is going to be rolling here. But let's start with the positives for the Rams defensively, right? And whether they are a team that can slow down Rodgers to the degree, at least for them to cover the line we're talking about here. If you look this season at where the Packers have struggled. The Bucs game was perhaps the most significant and certainly the weakest offensive performance of the season. And you look at how the Bucs shut down that offense and how the Rams can replicate that with pressure, with stifling the run, which of course puts Rodgers onto a different trajectory if Aaron Jones is stifled to a significant enough degree. And then, of course, Jaden Ramsey in the mix, but also the secondary full stop. Ramsey on Adams, sure, that's going to be something everybody talks about, but it's more collectively, if that run game is stopped, if Rodgers doesn't have time, if he's pressured a lot, and the matchup in terms of the Rams secondary against amazing wide receiver and a cast of, let's face it, indifferent also rounds that Rodgers elevates because he's so good. All of those reasons lean me towards the Rams keeping this competitive. At the very least, making sure that they can stop the Packers accelerating away from them. So the problem I have is on the other side of the ball. What's your perspective on that, Al? Do you think there's going to be a major difference in terms of offensive capability if it's Goff or if it's Wolford?
I actually don't, purely based off my faith in Sean McVay. I think that he'll be able to adapt to this offense as we saw him do pretty swiftly with Jared Goff when Wolford went out of the game against the Seahawks. And I think that no matter which quarterback is in there, I think Sean McVay will have a relevant plan to take down this Packers defense. I think whether it's Wolford or Goff, I think the Rams' offensive success will basically be solely based on the run game. Mm. I think Akers tore up one of the best run defenses in the league in the Seahawks last week. The Packers ranked 21st in yards allowed per carry. Mm-hmm. So if Akers and Brown have success, the play action rolls with Jared Goff and the Rams have a chance. And if it's Wolford, then Wolford also has a chance to tear it up with the legs.
See, going into last week's game, it's a great point. And Akers, you're absolutely right, is pivotal. But going into last week's game, one of the either one of the pods we were doing or one of the columns I was doing, I can't remember where I made this point, but I was less worried about the Goff-Wolford. There are the upside with both, right? Wolford's obviously more mobile, adds a different dimension in that respect. There's not much tape on him, so defenses don't really know him as well. Goff, vastly more experienced. When he's on song, is better than his detractors suggest, right? But then I saw Goff play. You know I'm a Goff fan, right? I like Goff. Yeah. I think he's better than people recognize.
Another week might allow his thumb to heal a little bit more and he might actually be able to spin the ball.
Well, you'd hope so. And you'd hope he's going to be significantly better than he looked last week. And look, I didn't think they intended to play him, right? I mean, that was, I clearly he wasn't able to. And credit to him for his guts and just getting it done. Yeah. So yeah, he probably...
And not turning the ball over.
Yeah, that's true, which has been his big issue all season. The other thing I thought was quite interesting, keen to get your take on it all. So you've got McVay versus LaFleur, right? Mm-hmm. And as we know, McVay has an unbelievable memory, right?
Ridiculous
photographic memory. So in all seriousness, I wonder how much of a problem... I mean, you could argue that works both ways. And I don't know, maybe LaFleur equally has an unbelievable recollection of things, plays that happened 11 years ago in high school, whatever McVay manages to wheel out. But I wonder if that is a bit of an edge, that the familiarity angle, which is sometimes, I think, overplayed. I wonder if that, in this instance, LaFleur hasn't been that far gone in terms of flying from the nest. McVay is incredible in that respect. I wonder whether he is going to have a bit of an edge there, McVay, in anticipating what LaFleur might be dialing up.
Yeah, I think there's very few coaches in the league that will be able to go head-to-head solely with McVay in terms of play calling. Like, I really do back Sean McVay as being one of the best coaches in the league and for the reasons you suggested. And I think that's why we're both here leaning towards the Rams, keeping it closer than potentially the spread suggests. I was obviously a little bit more... I was a little bit more tempted by the 7, the 6.5, you know what we're like now. Yeah. We're a little bit, it's always slightly scary because all it takes is one touchdown near the end. Yeah, and the number inflates. But at the same time, like, I just think that this game will be pure. Like, all I just really don't, and this is what I'm hoping Sean McVay doesn't do. All I don't want to do is see John Wolford going into shotgun, sitting in the pocket and throwing the ball, whether it's Goff or Wolford. I don't want to see that happen in any instance, because I don't think that's going to be a recipe for success, because I think that when you consider how good this Packers coverage is, Jair Alexander is easily one of the best corners in the league. I don't want him seeing seeing either quarterback, whichever one's playing, sitting back and trying to throw the ball to Cooper Kupp and throw the ball to Robert Woods. I just don't want to see that. What I want to see is jet sweeps. I want to see play action. I want to see them trying to utilize the run as much as they can. I think Akers is going to be absolutely key in this game. And I think that's the way. And if there's one coach in this league, Nat, who can succeed by primarily doing such plays and running such an offense, I do think it's Sean McVay. Yeah, that's the one thing that I've got faith in.
It's a really fair call. Hey, listen, Ole, I've got a question for you. You'll enjoy, right? So,
yeah,
the Packers have committed 11 turnovers this year, right? Which is the best, lowest in the NFL. Is that more or less than Jared Goff has on his own?
There's got to be less, surely.
It is less. Okay. What's the line, would you say, on how many less? So if you were going to put money on it now, what would it be?
So 11 turnovers for the whole Packers offense.
Yeah.
I'd probably say 4.
Oh, so close. 6 fewer than Jared Goff.
6?
On his own. The flip side of that,
my God.
The Packers have only forced 25 turnovers, right?
Yeah.
18 of those... there are 25 turnovers, 18 were forced and 7 were fumble recoveries, right? So to follow your line through, if it is Goff and he can correct that challenge that has wound McVay up for a lot of the season, which is being freewheeling with the ball, then that I think is going to be critical. It's not a defense capable that it is, of course, that is necessarily playmaking in that respect, right? So I mean, that's going to be key. So look, what are we saying here? I think we like the Rams to be competitive. I understand what you're saying, play the number. You could maybe shave a bit of heat off and take it to 7 with the alt spread, and it could be worth looking, particularly if you're gonna maybe tease this with something else. I do feel more comfortable with 7. I think I'm going to take a look at 6.5 as well.
Yeah, no, I would tend to agree with that. I mean, I think the Packers are going to win. That's the thing here, isn't it? I think that this game is going to be much closer than the line suggests. I don't think it's necessarily going to be 7 points. I think, generally speaking, like, it's incredible that we're seeing in a divisional round of the NFL two spreads that are basically a touchdown or higher. Like, that is crazy to me, but considering the quality of the teams that have to be to get there in the first place. And then, we haven't actually discussed, I just want to get a quick, your thoughts on the other side of the ball in terms of the Rams defense against Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has thrown more touchdowns than Green Bay have had punts this year. But it's crazy. But then I do think that's largely due to their division and how weak their division is defensively. But the one area that I think is going to be critical in this game is the protection for Rodgers on the left side.
Yeah,
no, Bakhtiari is massive.
Huge.
Because guess who's... It's not Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald's coming straight up the middle, which is going to cause your own problems. You're going to want to double team him throughout. But coming from that left side is a man that you're a big fan of and who has been excellent all season. That's Leonard Floyd. And I think that he is going to get in Rodgers' face consistently throughout this game. As you said earlier on, against the Bucs, he was pressured and he failed. He was pressured on 44% of his dropbacks that day.
Yeah.
LA entered this game with a league high pressure rate since week 14 of 51%. This is where the game is going to get really interesting for me. I don't think we're going to see the Rams putting up a lot of points. I just don't see it being possible. I don't think they're going to go sort of 25 plus and we're going to see a shootout by any stretch of the imagination. But what they can do is dominate possession with the run game, get Cam Akers going. My prop bet for this game is actually Cam Akers to have more receiving yards than the line suggests. I saw it at about 14.5, 15.5, but Betfred are yet to release that. So I'd focus on that and Cam Akers to score a touchdown. Green Bay have allowed the 8th most touchdowns to running backs and the 3rd most receiving yards to the position. So I expect Akers has been incredibly efficient in that part of the game. So I think that's where the game is going to be won or lost for the Rams. But I don't see the Packers necessarily scoring that many points either. That's the thing. And then I just want a quick take before we move on, Nat. Who wins? Adams, Ramsey.
I'm Ramsey all the way. Hey, look, I love this Rams defense, and I think we all do, right? And it's for obvious reasons, they're the best in show. They're the best defense in the NFL, but because defense just doesn't get as much attention, it was always been the way, right? But I think when you've got a player like Ramsey, who is the closest in terms of our generation, this generation, to Deion Sanders in terms of... Yeah, and I know there have been some brilliant Revis, but he has got, he's got the goods. I love his showmanship. I think he has demonstrated time and again that when he's up against elite receivers, he can take it down. I think Ramsey gets the better. That's going to be a brilliant matchup, though. And look, hey, Adams, what a season he has had. So that's certainly not a clear call and a straightforward call. But hey, not least because he's friend of the show, Jalen Ramsey as well, right? I mean, we've interviewed Jalen Ramsey. He's been on the show. So if Devontae Adams had stumped up for an interview, then, you know, maybe I'd have a different perspective on that. All right, Baltimore Buffalo next. Oh, boy. This is a pick'em if ever I saw.
Wow. Wow.
What are we looking at in terms of the numbers here, Rob?
The numbers have been, I mean, it's been volatile all week. Mm. It started at 2.5, which is now where it is, but it's been up to 3 in favor of Buffalo, but it's been up to 3 in favor of Buffalo. It's been down to 1.5. It's been at 2. It's literally just going up and down. I think there's one thing we know. If there's a home team with a 2.5 point spread, that means that the bookies and Vegas and Betfred have absolutely no idea what's going to happen in this game.
They're saying, because this is it. I mean, in a normal world, normal season, that line is 3, right, in terms of infield advantage. Yeah, so you're basically saying if they played on a neutral field, you know, essentially that's kind of where... Now, I know that's feels like it's been negated to a degree. Obviously, Buffalo had fans in last time out. They will again.
It was pretty loud at points. It was pretty loud. If there's going to be the Bills Mafia, they'll be going for it.
I don't know how much, because of course it's environment and noise and acoustics and everything else. And definitely, you know, when you're talking about a team like Seattle, particular, right? We know how much impact the 12th man can have. But I think it's more than that. It's the travel, it's the familiarity in terms of being around the facility, around, you know, in your at home, in your own environment, in the build up to the game. I think that counts for something as well, particularly right now in terms of the world we're living in COVID. So I don't know how important home field advantage is. What do you think? This going into these playoffs, how much of an edge, if any, does it give a home team?
Do you know what it's time for, Nat? It's time for the weather report.
Oh, yeah.
40% chance of snow.
Wow. Now we're talking a snow game in Buffalo.
Lamar Jackson has never played in snow.
Well, wowzers. 40% at the time of recording. Okay. That is interesting. But although, you know, is that going to... How much does that affect a player like Lamar Jackson? I would say significantly less than a lot of other quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's true. Although if it's not turf, is it? So he could be quite slippy under feet. Mm-hmm. Like if he's going to have to get those long studs going. So I don't know. If you've never played in it before, you're going to be uncomfortable, as you just said. It's all about that environment. It's all about that familiarity. And if you're
you can handle it all, though. Yeah, you can handle it.
Playing in the snow. Oh yeah, 100%. Easy. Prefer it, right? I prefer it. Yeah, I prefer the adversity. You know,
sub-zero temperatures. You prefer that.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't even bother. You don't need gloves. You don't bother with that. You don't bother with that kind of hand warmer thing. You're just like straight into it.
Yeah. Always. I think it's easy. I think it's easier, if anything, because everyone else is playing worse and obviously staying at the same level and if not improving. So that's...
last week, right? The reason we went with Baltimore in the Titans game, the primary reason was that we felt there was more upside with Baltimore if the core offense was neutralized, right? So the argument that we put forward was both lean on the ground games. If you can neutralize Henry, what do Tennessee do next? And the problem, the flaw in the Tennessee offense is the neutralization of Henry to a significant degree negates to a reasonable degree the play action, puts too much pressure on Tannehill and that passing offense. And that's what we saw play out. The flip side of that is, well, you shut down the ground game of Baltimore, by which I mean Edwards and Dobbins, and what happens next? What do Baltimore have next? And we talked about Lamar and the X factor that he has, which he demonstrated in one of the great playoff plays forever and certainly in recent memory, right? So let's look at this game in the same way, right? If Baltimore can shut down Diggs, let's take Diggs, right? If you know, this is Belichick looking at this, he'd be like, let's take Diggs out of the game. Can Allen do enough with John Brown, with Cole Beasley, obviously, who's on last week's show, he said was really significant, Dawson Knox as well. And Allen's not the runner that Lamar is, but he's a dual threat quarterback. He's certainly not a million miles away. So does he have enough of a supporting cast around him? Does he offer enough to be able to extend plays, to scramble and scrabble for a first down, to keep drives alive when things are falling apart around him? Can he evade pressure? All of those things. Yeah, I think absolutely he can, in a way. And Tannehill's a decent runner as well, but not as strong as Allen. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is, even if this strong Baltimore defense get the upper hand in terms of the passing game, or certainly in terms of taking down the number one threat, I think there are other weapons around that Daboll and co. might be able to keep in the game and keep the chains moving. And I think Allen can do that quite comfortably as well if they have to revert to plan B. So that is why I'm slightly leaning towards Buffalo here. But it is really, really jammed. I mean, this is, to me, the definition of a pick-em at the moment.
Definitely. And I think one of the most interesting things about this for me is the fact that from a matchup perspective, I don't know if this could be any worse for the Buffalo Bills. Mm. Their weakness in their team that everyone is aware of is their rushing defense. And they're going up against the number one rushing offense in the league. They're also going up against one of the best passing defenses in the league. I mean, they literally have a cornerback selection of Marcus Peters, Marlon Humphrey and Jimmy Smith. It doesn't really get much stronger than that. Marcus Peters is an interception machine. Mm. And I honestly think that Buffalo going into this, if you break it down just from a man-to-man perspective, I think potentially this is one of the worst games they could have asked for in the playoffs.
You know, on that, because I know you love a stat, and actually, for the benefit of our listeners, probably unaware, I'm seeing all on camera here. I mean, up to his waist, piles and piles of old school Xerox paper with charts and graphs and stats. And so, I mean, that's all you've been doing, right, since we last recorded Edge Rush?
Has been. And this is the issue with it. There's so many stats, but so little certainty.
Right. Well, you'll love this. So here's the kicker stat for me when it comes to the Bills' Achilles heel. In the three losses they've had this season, three games they've lost, opponents have averaged 200 yards plus per game. So you get the ground game rolling against the Bills, you got a fighting chance of winning. The flip side of that, in games, and another stat for you, because I know you love them all, in games this season that Josh Allen has averaged more than 6.5 yards per pass attempt, what do you think the Bills' record is?
11-0.
13-0. Including the playoffs.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
So they get the air, if you can contain, and particularly obviously the length of pass is critical there. If you can force them down to the slot to essentially take certainly Diggs and to an extent Brown out of the game, you got a fighting chance. If you can't do that, then it gets messy.
And this is exactly what we're talking about, because the team that's going to have one of the best opportunities to do that in the league is the Baltimore Ravens. This is an absolute nightmare matchup for the Buffalo Bills. We haven't even gotten to the dual threat quarterback stat yet. Last two they played were Kyler Murray and Cam Newton, who averaged over 5 yards per carry and both scored 2 touchdowns between them. They have had absolute disasters when trying to stop dual threat quarterbacks. And they are going up against the king of dual threat quarterbacks in the league right now, in Lamar Jackson. Okay. But at the same time, Nat, in the same way as you, I am leaning towards the Bills, purely based off the fact that there has been several times throughout this season where the mentality of the Buffalo Bills in prior seasons and what we've seen from them historically going against big teams in prime time, in big matchups, they have tended to underdeliver. Mm-hmm. This season has just been the direct opposite of that. Yeah. Every time I've watched the Buffalo Bills in primetime standalone games, Josh Allen has been like nothing short of sensational. And when we're talking about a player going up against some of the best passing defenses in the league, which Baltimore certainly are, he has scored 87 points against the Dolphins this season. That is easily the second best cornerback duo in the league in Byron Jones and Xavier Howard.
Yeah.
87 points against those two teams.
Yeah.
There's 26 against the Steelers, 34 against the 49ers, 35 against the Rams. Mm. He is not scared of this Baltimore Ravens team. And also, I think the one everyone's going to focus on that Colts game and how they did not look near to their best and they were firing in the regular season, but they got to the playoffs and they stuttered a little bit. But let's be honest, it's a lot more daunting when you haven't won a playoff game in what, 150 years? Was that the last time Buffalo Bills had a playoff game?
75 years, I think it was.
Yeah, it's something ridiculous. Like, that's a lot more daunting of a prospect because that's such a massive... What's the phrase? Something off your back? Monkey off your back?
Yeah. And speaking of which, Lamar Jackson's won a playoff game now, right? So
that's true. So it's for both of them, I guess. Yeah. So that is
ridiculous,
for both of them.
Ridiculous narrative.
But that one I wasn't buying into the same. There looked to be, because Sean McDermott was about to go 0-3 in playoff games as a head coach if he had lost that game.
I think this year, that if he'd lost that game, that would have been a little bit different for sure because of... the promise of the Bills, but we talked about on last week's show. That's why I almost talked us out of the Bills pick, that the positioning they've got now is not an underdog, which they're perennial. Certainly, since the Jim Kelly era, they're not perennial underdogs. They're not the favorites. They're used to being underdogs. They're used to being the also rounds, of course, in the AFC East. And this year it wasn't scrapped into the playoffs and, oh, look, slightly patronizingly, oh, the Bills are in the playoffs. This year they're the team that can take the Chiefs down. We went into it on last week's show, and I do think that creates a different dynamic. But the way they played against the Titans, I guess, told us a lot of what we need to know in terms of how they're embracing that. And certainly Allen, I think you nailed that with Allen. He's fearless. It's not just his ability that has been enhanced. We talked about on our radio show on Sunday that the way that he, I think it was Ross Tucker making the point, if you look at his year-on-year percentage completion improvement, it's extraordinary. And it's not just down to Diggs there. It's not just down to Daboll. Those are both fundamental parts of that, but it's down to Allen as well. He is a quarterback that is getting better and better. And the range of his ability is critical as well. He can do so many different things, right? He just seems to be a really rounded quarterback. And that's not a knock on Lamar. That wasn't a kind of veiled comparison to Lamar, because I'm, again, in terms of patronizing takes, this idea that still persists, right? That Mike Tenier, again, friend of the show, great, great writer. And he made a really, really good point about Lamar Jackson is still the kind of quarterback that your father-in-law doesn't particularly like. Great. So, this is ridiculous, but we've talked at length, certainly on Edge Rush, about the shortcomings with the offense for Lamar around him, right? And this brings those two examples together quite clearly. We've made the connection a number of times this season that Lamar needs a Stephon Diggs, right? And if he had someone like Diggs, we'd be talking about an altogether different Baltimore offense. But he doesn't have it. I still think it's unbelievably close to call. So listeners, I don't feel hugely strongly when I say I'm leaning Bills, but if I'm put on the spot, I'm taking Buffalo just.
Listen, if you did nothing but bet the Bills and the Ravens since Thanksgiving, you're 13-1 against the spread.
Okay.
Yes, okay. Which is, to me, these two teams are two of the best teams in the NFL. This is going to be an incredible game to watch. And as I've said, Buffalo are not scared to take on one of the better defenses in the NFL. And that's what this Baltimore Ravens are. Mm. Buffalo, with all due respect, are not very good at defending the run, which the Ravens are incredible at. They got absolutely destroyed by Jack Doyle last week, which means, and I know I do this every week, but which I do see Mark Andrews having a big game.
Here we go. It's the Mark Andrews. Can we get Mark Andrews to sponsor your prop bet?
I would love Mark Andrews to feel about that prop bet. I think that he's going to have a big game.
Mark Andrews proper prop bet of the week.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. He's always going to be in there. So do you know what that means, Nat?
What does it mean?
Keep an eye on the weather. It could be biblical was the word I was looking for. But if it's not, if it's anything less than that, I'm taking the over.
Okay. Oh, he's going over. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm going the over. I want to be sitting here. I'm going to have to stay up till 4 a.m. to watch this game, Nat.
Yeah.
I am not betting the under.
No, exactly right.
I'm not betting. Yeah.
That's a fair call. For all listeners out there that pull the night shift, just take the over. Even if you have firm conviction it's going to be the under, it's boring to do that. There's nothing worse, really, I think, than the only thing worse than an under is probably a first half under. that's even more miserable. Okay, all right. So a few takes there, I think. And Ole likes the over, which is interesting. I might look at that. The Super Wildcard Weekend is out of the way. It is time for divisional action. Why isn't the Super Divisional round? Anyway, can the Browns and Baker Mayfield cause another upset? Who's going to win the duel between Breeze and Brady, combined age 114 years? And can the Rams D stop Rodgers, Adams and the Packers? Betfred, a double delight on all playoff games. So back a first touchdown scorer, and if he gets into the end zone before anyone else and then grabs a second, they'll pay you out at double the odds. Also, check out the odds on this weekend's games and keep an eye out for price boosts as well. Double delight singles only. Bets must be placed prior to kickoff to qualify. Betfred rules apply. Full terms at betfred.com/promotions. 18 plus, be gambleaware.org. And as always, please gamble responsibly. Speaking of over, that's where I am going, I think, with Browns Chiefs. Even though it's an extraordinarily high number, that's what I feel. I feel a little bit more comfortable about. But we'll break down why. Give us the look, Ol, in terms of the totals and where the line's looking.
So when the Cleveland Browns game finished, my instinct was to immediately go to Betfred and bet the Kansas City spread and the over, because I thought that those two. The, as you know, buy low, sell high, Nat. Everyone's considering quite low on the Kansas City Chiefs because of their recent performance against the Atlanta Falcons, notwithstanding what they did against the Chargers, because that was all backups. That Falcons game was the worst game of their season, and it came in the most recent game that Patrick Mahomes started. And the Cleveland Browns have just gone and beaten the Pittsburgh Steelers. But as you said, that was heavily because of what the Pittsburgh Steelers did on offense in terms of turning the ball over.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, I'll take the Kansas City Chiefs here, and I'll also take the over-under, because the last time we saw these two quarterbacks go head-to-head, Mahomes and Baker Mayfield, was one of the best shootouts in college football history.
Yeah.
Neither team is that strong defensively, but both very strong offensively. And I think the matchups work really well. I mean, Kansas City obviously have one of the best passing games in the league, if not the best passing game in the league. The Cleveland Browns allowed 500 yards to Ben Roethlisberger in the air. People are forgetting that.
Total yards, passing yards, first downs. The only key area there was the running game, obviously, which the Steelers have literally none.
Yeah.
But in most other areas, they they were chasing the game. They were 28 zip down. But it's, the Steelers were putting up points on this Browns offense and causing damage. Yeah, with ease, exactly.
With ease. I mean, Ben was having an absolute party. And so I was thinking, and then on the other side of the ball, obviously Kansas City, what's the consistent narrative? That they can't stop the run. Cleveland Browns had the best offensive line in the league. They have two of the best running backs in the league. You've got Kareem Hunt coming back against his old team. So I was thinking, I'm going to take the over and I'm going to take Kansas City here. The over-under, when it opened, was 56 and is now 57. And Kansas City opened at minus 10. Those are insane numbers for a minus 10 round matchup.
You're right. You're spot on with that. And look, I hear you. Even this year where... you know, totals have generally been flying, although, as you say, for a divisional round matchup, that should correct itself. Look at the Chiefs' loss to the Raiders as a bit of a marker here, right? In the same way we looked at the Bucks Packers game earlier on to give us some kind of indication of, okay, in that defeat, the Chiefs gave up a 72-yarder to Ruggs, a 59-yarder to Aguilar, and a 43-yard run from Devontae Booker. So I think that will be the game plan to a significant degree for Stefanski, obviously to establish the ground game, and that's where they're gonna make hay. Everybody's favorite stat about the Chiefs or take on the Chiefs: they can't defend the run. Well, that they can't. They're averaging 122 yards per game, which ranks them 21st in the league. So it's not as bad as, you know, some might say, although I guess, again, you'd argue, well, same thing as with the Bills. The Chiefs often are dominating games, and so you got to air it out to catch them up. So a little bit misleading maybe there, but it's not great. It's not a great run D, and it is a great rushing attack that the Browns have. And it is reasonable to assume that they will be able to gash and rack things up, and by establishing the run, look at mixing it up and land some big hits as well. So I think the Browns will do that. I think the Chiefs win this game. Do I think they win it by double digits? tougher call.
Yeah.
But they will put up points on this not great Browns D. But I think the Browns will go at least toe-to-toe for a while. And that's why I like big numbers is I like the over. I like it.
Yeah, no, I mean, so do I, to be fair. I mean, it's just like, no matter what the total was, even if it's at 57.
How high would you have taken? How high would you go? 65.
Yeah, it wouldn't be, 60 plus is not, it's like a college game in that sense, yeah. Isn't it? It's really not necessarily out of the question.
Yeah.
And also at the same time, we had Jason Bell on the show for the reactionary pod to the Super Wildcard Weekend. And he said that the one thing that Spagnuolo does is when he sees an obvious strength in an opposition's offense, he just sells out to take it away.
Yeah.
And he'll sell out to take away the run game for this Browns. He actually did. I was looking interesting back at the playoffs last year, because obviously they played the two of the best rushing teams in the league in the playoffs last year, in the Titans and the 49ers. Mm-hmm. And they basically forced Tannehill and Jimmy G to throw in both of those games.
Yep.
So Jay Bell is very much on point there. And I think they'll probably do the same here. But then Baker Mayfield has had a higher QB rating than Mahomes since week 9. So I actually can't wait to watch Baker Mayfield actually have to lead this game. And he's probably going to have to come from behind as well. Even if he goes out into a lead, there's going to be a point where the Chiefs are winning this game. And Baker Mayfield is going to be on him to take his team down the field, utilize Jarvis Landry, utilize Rashad Higgins, utilize Austin Hooper, and take this game back to Patrick Mahomes. And I think he's got the capability to do that. I'm higher on Baker than a lot of people are, but that's largely to do with what Kevin Stefanski has managed to do with him. So I think the over is the play.
Going into this game as well, along that, I think, you know, Baker's going to be more confident than ever before in his NFL career, right? They're going into this with confidence. They won, the defensive shortcomings notwithstanding, comprehensively against the Steelers. They've, you know, shaken off that perennial dysfunctional tag. They are massive underdogs. They've got nothing to lose here against the Chiefs. That's going to royally wind them up as well, that they're 10-point dogs. They're going to take it to them. And a point taken, Jay Bell's point, and, you know, you echoing it, that how Spagnuolo deals with that. Again, it's a kind of Belichickian route to neutralize the key asset. There's a big question as to whether they're able to execute that game plan, though, because this is a really, really impressive ground game. Remember, Betonio's back as well in the line. He was missing last week.
Yeah, but Conklin might be out, which is massive. That's the thing. You've got to keep a close eye on that immediately. There's two massive, massive offensive linemen injury reports to be focusing on this week, and that is one, Mitchell Schwartz, who is the tackle for the Chiefs, and it's looking like he's most likely not going to play, which I think the key for the Cleveland Browns in this game, and the player who's going to have, actually everyone's going to say it's going to be Nick Chubb, it's going to be Kareem Hunt, it's going to be Baker Mayfield. I think the biggest player in this game for the Browns is Myles Garrett. Honestly, I think that the Chiefs have one of the worst offensive lines. Without Mitchell Schwartz, I think they have a very mediocre offensive line, to say the least. The only reason why they have such good protection statistics is because they've got the best quarterback in the league, and because he's so good at evading pressure and utilizing the pocket and escaping the pocket to make plays happen and getting throws off when seemingly it's impossible. But if Myles Garrett can torch Eric Fisher at that tackle spot, which I think is highly likely, and it's Myles Garrett, it's a big player, it's a big game, he could do that, then he could cause the Chiefs a lot of problems. And similarly to Conklin, if Conklin's not there, I know they held Betonio back, but if Conklin's not there, then that will cause massive issues for the Browns. But right now, looking at the injury reports, it looks very likely that Conklin plays. Doesn't look likely at all that Mitchell Schwartz plays.
Okay, well, that's an edge definitely to the Browns then. Incidentally, that is one of the games. Of course, we break down all the games on a divisional round preview. And Mike, Ollie Hunter in the house as well, of course. Ollie, part of the Gridiron crew, TalkSport, and a massive Packers fan. So he gives his take on the Green Bay Packers so far. And Iron Mike on the other three games. That pod should have already dropped by the time you're listening to this. So go and check that out on our feeds. Right, final game, Ols. And we like the over, I think, is what we're saying on that one. Final game, similar injury issues to consider here in the New Orleans-Tampa Bay. Brady versus Breeze for the final time. Breeze is almost certainly, if not officially, retiring. That, incidentally, was the subject of my Times column this week. So we'll push that out as well on our social channels if you're interested.
Nice plug.
Thanks, mate. Seamless, I felt. The injuries I want to talk about here, obviously Ronald Jones and that scuppered propos bet last week, prop bet last week. Ronald Jones going down in warm-up last week. So we've got to keep an eye on that because I think that is a fundamental game changer if he doesn't go. Fournette stepped up and credit to Fournette. But if you've got Jones, I think that changes the dynamic of this game quite considerably. The other associated point, if we're talking and to follow through on your point about the Chiefs Browns line, respective lines, is that the game earlier on in the season when Tampa Bay were blown away, Tampa Bay's line was messed
up.
Yeah, in both games, but I think about the 38-3 shellacking in week 10, week 9. Yeah. Because week one, I'm not, you know, it's week one, Brady.
Yeah, you
know,
can't
not,
count it.
I don't think so, hugely. Week nine is more significant, right?
Yeah.
And the question is, well, why did that happen? How did it happen? And it was partly the same principle as the Browns-Steelers game, I guess, where they were just racing into control of the game and then you're always in a hole, you know, the knock-on effect of your defense is back on the field all the time. They just get less and less effective. More points get put up. The offense is then chasing the game even more, and it's a vicious circle, right? But one of the critical things, and it's something we get into on the divisional pod preview, is the impact on or the injuries on that Tampa Bay line caused all kinds of trouble in that game, right? And they are now at full strength, right? You are now in a very, you're seeing a very different offense now for all kinds of reasons, you know. They've got Fournette able to contribute a little bit, but Fournette and Jones, if he starts, very different dynamic to where they were earlier in the season. Antonio Brown's contributing. Gronk's been getting better as the weeks go by. And as Jay Bell pointed out on our show on Monday, not just in terms of his offensive contribution, but the blocking and all the other attributes to Gronk's game that have made him one of the all-time great tight ends. He's not the same as he was 7 years ago, but he's certainly a lot better than he was seven, 8 weeks ago, right? So this is an altogether different offense that the Bucs are putting up here. So I think there is this emphasis on, well, look at the previous games this season, is misleading.
Yeah, I completely agree with every point you made. Just to emphasize that even more so, Gronkowski, I think basically what Bruce Arians has done is realize that to have success in this offense with Tom Brady, he needs to protect him.
Yeah,
I think that is ultimately what he has worked out. So what he has done is he's basically added Gronk and the tight ends much more to the protection game. And I think they see that. I think Ryan Clark made this point actually on ESPN. He said that if Tom Brady's protected, he's still one of the best quarterbacks in this league. If he's not, he turns into Sam Darnold. It's basically what happens, which I think is a great point. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing here. So I think you are completely correct. I think they've changed their offensive scheme to protect Brady and give him the opportunity to excel the way he can. Just give him the time to pick the passes, read the defenses, and do what Tom Brady does. And at the same time, the other player, who is also an incredibly elite player historically, I don't necessarily agree with the fact that he's playing in this game, but Antonio Brown, when he played in that first New Orleans game when they got shellacked, he had no idea what he was doing. I was listening to a Bucks beat writer podcaster who said that I think he ran like 8 routes, which made absolutely no sense. There was a pass where he ended up directly standing next to Gronkowski. He'd just run the same route as Gronkowski. Like he had no idea. Yeah, he had no idea what he was doing.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, he scored touchdowns in the last two games, important games. He is looking like the old Antonio Brown. And I think when you consider that everyone talks about the fact that Mike Evans is going to be on Marshawn Lattimore's island, as he always has been, Chris Godwin is going to be taking up a lot of the defensive scheming. Antonio Brown is probably going to go up against a cornerback or go up against a defensive player who is nowhere near his standard. The only issue I slightly have is they've got that Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, who is notorious for winding up. I would keep an eye on that. I mean, we could see some fireworks there. So
big time. There is no doubt that they're going to send him up and say, look,
definitely.
I don't care if you get a 4-game suspension. We'll cover your salary.
Definitely. But so Antonio Brown's actually my prop bet for the week. I think you take the over yardage with him.
He'll
probably be around the 50-yard line, and I expect him to probably score a touchdown because I think he is going to be the person that Tom Brady will need to exploit.
Yeah.
And it's all just about, and I also just don't think you've got the best run defense going up against the second best run defense.
Mm.
So it's going to be really interesting to watch what happens here. New Orleans is 7-1 against the spread in its last 8 games as the betting favorite. The past 2 games that we've witnessed have led us to believe that the New Orleans Saints should win this game easily, but things have changed. Mm. And it's very hard to go 3-0 against a team in the season, despite the statistics that The sweep is actually 20 and 12 when teams have faced each other for the third time in the
playoffs. Third time. Yeah, what's a 20 in favor of
the person sweeping? So, oh, okay. New Orleans. So, yeah, if New Orleans,
interesting. All right, 21, so it becomes almost a 50-50 court. Yeah. So, what is the line at the moment?
So, the line is on majority of websites, it's 3, but on Betfred, it's actually 3.5, and the over under is at 51.5. That looks like it's probably going to go up.
Yeah, that's been going up since it opened as well. I think the over under,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it has. Money has been coming in on the over. I think the best thing about this game now is you've got. And now you've got the age, 85 years of quarterbacks playing in this game. You've got two of the best run defenses, the two best run defenses in the whole of the NFL. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to have to see? Those two passing the ball.
Yeah, right, right.
And I think that, to me, historically, knowing Tom Brady's competitiveness, do you know what's amazing? Yeah. That is, I'm pretty sure before I started talking and before we started talking, I was probably taking the Saints.
Now you're going Bucks.
Yeah. Now I think I'm probably leaning towards the Bucks. It's Tom Brady. He doesn't want to go out. It's probably Drew Brees' last season. He doesn't want to lose to Drew Brees 3 times in a row. He's going to do whatever it takes to beat this guy.
It's not Tom Brady's last. I was Brees' last season. I see what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's okay. Brees is like, he doesn't want to go. Tom Brady hates that kind of stuff. This is the exact thing. And Tom Brady uses any motivation he can get.
You know, this is one of those games where it's so hard to call. If you showed me the end result and said, look at this. I mean, the Bucks offense was so static and, you know, misfiring, and it was just felt really clunky and old school. And those things that were an issue early on in the season, although I wasn't buying into too much of that negativity and this absurdity that Brady's lost the deep ball and all this stuff. Everyone's getting carried away. But if you showed me that, it wouldn't surprise me. Equally, if you showed me them absolutely coughing the Saints up, you know, whatever you said about their run D, you know, Jones runs for 144 yards and 2 touchdowns. Antonio Brown has 100 yards. I wouldn't be surprised either. Yeah. It's so difficult to call, which I know is not a huge amount of help to our listeners. I think that the area that I'm probably leaning on here, despite the obvious capability of those defenses, is the over. And it's getting, you know, dangerously high now. But I think that we will, as you've perfectly described, see two of the all-time greats needing to air it out. And I think they both are talented in so many different ways, but they're the same point you made with Aaron Rodgers in terms of, and Wilson for that matter as well, in terms of being able to read the game and adapt. Their respective lack of mobility, Brady's in particular, it doesn't negate his mobility in the pocket, and just that little step either way to buy him a little bit more time. It's a totally different situation to where we were 9-10 weeks ago. So I think they'll be able to get this Bucks offense chiming, and there's absolutely no reason to doubt that even up against a decent Bucks defense, that Peyton and Breeze and this cast of weapons around him, of course Thomas back in the mix as well, Kamara's back and rolling, they will dial up, they will find ways to find holes in the respectively competent defenses. So I am leaning over more than a particular side, I think.
Yeah, because basically you just want to sit back and watch the game and enjoy it.
Exactly. Yeah. And have a small punt on the over and hope we see fireworks. You know?
Exactly. So, I think, yeah.
I think I'm leaning up. Are you leaning? So are you thinking Bucks?
At 3.5, I'm kind of leaning Bucks. I think this game is going to be close. I can't see it being nowhere near the blowout it has been in recent matchups between the two sides. Yeah. But the one thing that's interesting, and I think this is a point that goes actually potentially against the Bucks and also against the over, is the one thing that New Orleans Saints have been absolutely elite at, and I think there is full credit to what Drew Brees and Sean Payton are doing, and that is controlling the clock. Mm. Those drives against the Bears, oh my goodness. The amount of third downs, the amount of 5-yard gains, the amount of 3-yard gains, and just like ticking the clock, going over and over and over, sucking all of the momentum out of whatever Mitch Trubisky was able to do in that first half. And they did that the exact same thing against the Bucks in that 38-3 game.
Right, it's a good point.
That's what I'm scared of. If the Saints get up early in this game, then I think, and they do have the capability just to run that clock down and run that clock down. But at the same time, like, I just don't see that narrative taking basically happening in this game. I can't see it happening in this game just purely based off the size of it, of Tom Brady. And the best thing about this, Nat, is what happened last week. Mm. And it's probably the narrative that people aren't focusing on enough, is that they proved that Tom Brady can do it in prime time.
Yeah, because I was in doubt about that. I mean, I to be honest, I'm still on the fence about Brady. I feel he still has stuff to prove. So, he's to prove stuff to me.
I think his bedtime's too early to be playing this late game as well. I mean, he's going to bed at 8:30 during the week now. You can't then play that late.
What he's watching though on Netflix? Have we worked that out yet? It's something quite random. Like Brady's like really into the Gilmore Girls.
The Crowns.
The Crown. I bet Brady's watching something like The Shield and gets really wild, really fired up before again. Yeah, Big Mackie action. All right.
He doesn't watch Netflix. He's just watching himself play American football.
Just watching tape of himself the entire time. Of course he is. What a ridiculous question. Okay. Let's get down to our final business then. So we're not rolling with an acca of the week this week because we're not going through. We're going with a double. Right. So we're going with a money line double. So two of the four. Let's pick one each. How about that?
Okay.
Oh, should we do it?
Yeah, but I'm leaning towards, okay, you pick yours and then I'll give what I think that what we should go with. Because I think the one thing that we both really liked, let's be honest, was the over in the Kansas City game.
We like the over in the Kansas City game.
So I think you could put that in the acca. You can put that in the acca. It's the same as putting a spread in the acca.
All right. So put that in the. So we're taking an over and then two team. Okay. How about we mix it up? We take an over, a team straight up, and then a team with the points. We're giving them the points. All right.
Okay,
so
fine.
I'm taking the Bills straight up. You know, you're giving me that look, Cole, for our listeners.
This is so tough.
Put his two fingers by the side of his cheek and his thumb under his chin and gave me that look that we've all had over the years from teachers who just look disappointed.
But it's the one that I actually, to be fair to you, I'm more than happy rolling with Josh Allen.
That's it. Look, this is going to be a contentious week. It's going to be a gamble in the purest sense, right? So it'll be a pretty decent acca, I'm guessing, in terms of odds. We put it together. So look, for all the reasons we said in the show, it's not clear cut by any stretch. But we have landed this season, 80% of our accas, something like that?
Yeah, it's good.
Keep the faith, Keep the faith.
Yeah.
Buffalo. Okay, what about, we like the over in the Kansas City-Cleveland game.
Yeah, I think we're going to take Tampa Bay +3.5.
Tampa Bay +3. I've got no problem with that.
We are going to take it. I think that's what I'm leaning towards. I think this game's good. I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that Tampa Bay are going to win this game, but I think three and a half points is a lot. I think this game is undoubtedly going to be close. I think it has to be.
All right. I like it. There we go. Another edge rush in the bag. Huh? Was that good? Was that all right?
Yeah, that was good.
I'll practice.
Yeah,
that was good. While you're working through your stats and your graphs and your pages and pages of
my grass.
Grass. I don't think you've been mowing the lawn at this time of year.
Yeah, working through my grass.
While you're working on all of that, I'll be working on my edge rush. There we go. We're done and dusted. Just to recap the pods, we are J-Bell with a wild card weekend preview. Worth a listen to that ahead of the divisional round weekend. Some great insight as ever from Jay Bell on the teams you're going to be seeing this weekend. I and Mike, Ollie Hunter in the house for our divisional round preview. And we're back on Monday. Greg Brady will help me unpick it all. So the pod's flying thick and fast as we roll towards the Super Bowl. Lots of extra content on the social channels as well at the NC Show, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We put videos of all of our shows up on there as well. So if you want to see the brilliant painting behind Propo that I've been enjoying during the recording of this one, that is where you head. So get involved with our social channels if you haven't already. And finally, last but by no means least, big shout out to all of you who have left reviews for us on whichever pod platform you're listening to us on. There's a lot of love, even more love of Edge Rush. So we appreciate that on iTunes. Some listeners are very kind. He said they're enjoying the Edge Rush show. So relations of yours, presumably all.
Almost certainly. I was wondering that. It must be.
Mark Andrews.
That is definitely who it is. It's definitely Mark Andrews. Definitely.
He's just created loads of burner accounts and he's leaving reviews.
That's amazing.
Go and check that out. If you have 30 seconds, we massively appreciate that. And it helps spread the word and, of course, keeps the worldwide leader happy and indeed our fantastic sponsors, Betfred. So loving your work there. Hope you're enjoying ours. We are going to be back Monday with our divisional round review show. We'll see you then. Bye, all.
See you later, Nat.